Holy cow, there's a story for you, right? Delivering pizza, you get kidnapped.
Oh, yeah, that sounds, it's amazing. It sounds fictional. It's so dramatic.
I mean, I'm glad he's okay, but there you go. I mean, if all the Domino's pizza guys, they're all sitting around talking about different things, and then the guy's like, yeah, well, I got back of the car. Oh, my God, you're the guy, right? He's got that. Man, never, no one can take that from him, Tom.
You live for the story. You wish it happened to you so you could have another story.
I mean, no. Wait, hold on. I'm out here in the wilderness, Tom. The people can come by.
Let's not encourage them. Here.
Well, as long as you let me go after an hour, all right?
That's right. Maybe they could start your equipment for you.
Good. And nothing about the there she is. H. Scott.
Hello.
Hannah Scott. All righty. Hey, this is a fascinating story. I love when all of a sudden the people rise up and go, hey, look what we've got. We can get a bunch of signatures on a piece of paper and bypass the knuckleheads.
That's exactly what's happening here. This is a large group that some might call generally competing interests to some degree that have come together. They've been planning this for a bit. They are called the Compassion Seattle Group, and they are going to offer a charter amendment. It's a citizen initiative, but a charter amendment that would essentially bypass the city council and say, look, this is what you need to do, city, as far as responding to the homeless crisis because of frustrations that things haven't been done. Aaron Goodman with the Soto Business Improvement District is part of the alliance.
For too long, our city has allowed this problem to continue to get worse and worse and worse. And Seattleites have been told that it's an either-or choice, that you can be supportive and compassionate to the people living on the streets, or you can expect to be able to go into your park and have it clean. And I think that's a false choice. I think we can do better, we can be bolder, and that we can work on a plan that does both.
Now, here's what the charter amendment would do.
Requires the city to, in a dedicated fund behavioral health services, produce additional, significant number of additional emergency and permanent housing units. It requires the city to expand their crisis rapid response capability, to, you know, further invest in diversion programs for people that are cycling through without resolution. And it also requires that once these services are available, that the city has a commitment to the parks and the people of Seattle to ensure that those spaces are available for use by the general public.
And when she says that more beds and more permanent supportive housing options would need to be there, it requires specifically 2,000 additional of those spaces. And it also has the more crisis response units. Those are the not cops, but kind of different programs where you're seeing more mental health, behavioral health people respond. And here's the idea there.
We have a small version of this now with the city's Health One, which is operated out of the fire department. There has also been a lot of conversation at city council about creating a service provider-based program like a CAHOOTS or a STARS. The charter amendment does not prescribe one over the other, but just that we need to be looking at a different response for people that are having either a mental health crisis or behavioral disorders in public, and that we need to have a different response.
So is this essentially a vote of no confidence for city leadership?
We need to work together. I mean, it's not specifically at the city council or the mayor, but what I hear from my ratepayers is that they don't feel like the city is moving in any direction and that the status quo is the plan. And so, you know, too often I have spent a lot of time advocating for my district, for Soto, around these issues. And often the response I get is, well, what's your plan? What would you do? And, you know, it came time for a bunch of us to get together and say, okay, well, what would we do?
And that's where they came up with the plan. They filed this today. She says the group conducted a poll early on and found 71% of Seattle voters favored this plan.
People in Seattle want a compassionate response and they want something done. And so we have to figure out a way that gets at the heart of the issue that people are experiencing in their neighborhoods, but then also make sure that the people who are living on the streets are provided with best options possible for getting off the street. At this point, that concept is extremely popular with Seattle voters, that we can do not either or, but and. Yes, we can support the people living on the streets, and we can ensure that our sidewalks and right-of-ways and parks are clear of encampments.
So I asked her that afterwards. I said, because Dave Ross asked me this every day, when are you going to get the tents off the sidewalks? That's what Dave always asks. And so I asked her, I said, are you telling me this is going to do it? It's going to clear all the tents and everything off the sidewalks and the parks. And she said, you know, that's a big lift. This is a charter amendment, but that's the ultimate kind of down the line goal. But she stressed, you know, it took years to get into this situation. It's going to take a minute to get out.
Okay. So we like about this, Tom, and I like the fact that you have. It's two groups that are normally not sharing the solution. They both see the problem. Nonprofit comes at it from one side. Businesses say, hey, this is a problem. So they come together. Let me ask you about financing. So if the charter amendment passes, they need 30,000 signatures. So then they say, okay, we want you to be able to have housing and do this, and that's going to cost money. What's the power of a charter amendment to actually direct dollars towards a budget line?
This would require that Seattle use 12% of its existing general fund. This is based on what they saw in the 2020 budget for this purpose, for all of these things. And they say that they think they're confident that they've got what they need to do. They're just not spending it in the right place right now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. I can imagine that. They could do this all the time. I remember taking driving lessons, and the guy on the right, my driver instructor, he had his own steering wheel and his own gas and his own brake, right? Amazing car. And you'd be driving along, and you'd be not doing well, and he would just sort of take over the car. So are you telling me the people of Seattle occasionally could bypass the children that are the elected officials and just start to do this type of charter amendments on a variety of different topics?
If they can gather the signatures and get the, you know, organization then they could. And is that a good idea for everyone? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know what you end up with.
Yes, for the people that are in there now, it's a vote of no confidence. That's what you said.
Yeah. So.
Yes. Well, that's what I asked.
Brilliant.
I didn't say. I didn't say, yes. But. Tom has questions, I can tell.
Yeah. John and I talked a bit about this. Yeah, I love the idea that you have the Downtown Business Association working in concert with the Public Defenders Association person, Lisa Dogard, with the United Way, with Chris Gregoire, with all these. I mean, you've got all these out-of-office civic leaders, I think, is a way to kind of put it, representing all these different formats. And they've managed to come up with a single format that they think will work. And I'm cheered by that. However, I'm all positive. I think this sounds great. The question is, how is it going to work? And for all of our dismissing of the city council for being incompetence or whatever, 12% of the general fund. How much is that? And is that more than these individual council members or individual nonprofits or whatever would be spending? Because I would love to think that if by adding just 2,000 housing situations, that we could solve the problem where we have, what is it, something like 7,000 homeless people in Seattle? I'm not sure how that works.
I don't think they're sure right now what the count is, but yeah.
Okay. But the problem is that if this could be the solution, I think a lot of Seattleites would vote for that. 12% of the general fund. How much is that? How much are we spending already? And because by making a charter amendment, that means we have to do that. We have to spend this kind of money. And would that be enough money to move people out of the encampments? Even the people that feel like it's an abrogation of their rights to force people out of these encampments, unless there's a place to stay. If they don't have a place to stay, they don't have to move. We have to get everything, all our ducks in a row before we can move anybody out. That just seems like it's too perfect a solution to be able to pull this off.
Well, the city of Seattle's operating budget is about $6 billion, right?
Right, a little over six.
So
a little
$6 billion, right. Right. So then you take 10% of that, you get out of there, $60 million is what you end up with. So then is it $60 million or $600 million? $60 million, 10%, yeah. So the for the police, for instance, Tom, they spend is it $540 million? It's something like that. It's the biggest chunk.
It's $400 before cuts.
Okay, and then transportation's part of it. In there, normally it is it falls under the category of like health and human services, outreach, community support. It's all kind of mixed in there, but it is. I think it's normally about 12%. I was surprised to see how small it was overall when you look how much money the city's spending on a whole bunch of other stuff. But the bigger thing is that will it reduce? I look to find out what city's done the best. The best is Houston altogether. They had almost 8,000 homeless. They cut it in half in less than 4 years by doing a thing called Housing First, which we talk about all the time.
Which is what
and
this
Houston
would be.
Said, exactly. So put them in a house, get them the treatment, get them off the street, do what Houston did. Don't do what San Diego did. The difference being, of course, zoning. Houston is like you can build a building anywhere in Houston. You can build a building on top of a building. But here, we really restrict all that sort of stuff. So I wonder if they'd be able to punch through all of the restrictions when it comes to permitting in order to actually start building stuff.
Well, it lists the beds, the options for the 2,000 beds can be hotels, motels, enhanced shelters, tiny house villages. So all of that they can do without the process that you're talking about. And it's what they have been doing during the pandemic. They have a lot of their ducks in a row. On top of that, you know, you'll remember the reason that you have to give the 72 hours notice to an encampment is because of the Supreme Court decision. I can't remember where it is right now, where it was, but it was said you had to do that before you could remove someone from sleeping outside. You had to give them the alternative. That's why this extra 2,000 beds. They're trying to make sure that they cannot be impacted by that court ruling. And they've put a lot of thought into this. And there's minds. You've got Downtown Seattle Association, right? And then the heads of LEED, all these people who have been trying to independently work with the mayor and the Seattle Council on their own. And one of the things she pointed out to me was the infighting for the last, I don't know, 2 years or whatnot between the mayor and the city council. And it just leads to nothing happening. And then also on the funding, I want to mention that the crisis response units, that's the same type of discussion we've been hearing a little bit at the council, where you take some of those dollars from the police budget because the cops don't want to respond to the mental health calls, right? And you put it over here into those first responders, behavioral health type folks, and do there. And then, you know, you have a cop available should they want it, but not make that the immediate response is the idea.
Hey, and John, I heard you kind of dismiss San Diego. San Diego is referenced by them, at least in the article about them, as, you know, something that they saw as a good model. Do you know something about San Diego that wasn't a success?
Just looking how they're doing compared to Houston. My big thing, I'd vote yes, and I'd put my name down. They need 30,000 signatures by June. I would say I'm all right with this as long as you make sure this is for residents of Seattle or King County.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yes.
If you have people coming in, because we bring them in, they come here because we don't enforce the laws. And if you want to live like a street person, come from all other cities and come to Seattle. People are extremely generous. You can shoot up drugs. The cops don't bother you. You get a great supply of drugs coming in because we're right here on the border. We've got the coast coming in, bringing in lots and lots of drugs from Canada and from Mexico. Come to Seattle and take part in our great homeless program. We'll give you a place to sleep. We'll let you shoot drugs. We'll feed you. Close that down. As Milton Friedman used to say, you can't have guaranteed income and a welfare-supported society as long as you don't enforce borders. We'd have to enforce our borders somehow.
I have two things to tell you. Two things. Yes. One, I'll tell you what I told Dory about this earlier. Once again, the existing problem of people out on the streets and using these drugs and doing all that we've been seeing for so long is not going away. If it ever had a hope of going away, that was killed when the Supreme Court issued the Blake decision, our state state Supreme Court that allows all of the small, you know, amounts of drugs to be legal. There's not going to be a legal fix to that with the knowingly added. That's not going to happen. What's going to happen is more treatment and more funding from the state level for that kind of statewide. But you're going to see these issues, and you're going to see those people, just like the guy in the basement the other day who said somebody from Texas sent him here, right, and put him on a bus. That's what's happening. Every time I talk to people in Pioneer Square, that's what I hear when I ask them where they came from, some other state. That is what's happening. But they're here. What are you going to do about it? Unless you put them on, we have a program to put them on a bus and send them back out, which is never going to happen on a large scale. The other thing I want to say is there is a small piece of the currently proposed state budget to start a study group on universal basic income. Just FYI.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, good. By the way, then, our last great homeless guy that made the news put all that put rocks or something in the sock and spun it around and smashed that woman in the face down there in Pioneer Square. He came here from the great city of New York City and came here to Seattle. He's crazy, unfortunately, and homeless, and he's the one that whacked the woman in the face a couple of weeks ago.
So, the difference would be that they have these low barrier places with shelter where you can let these people go, so they're not out there on the street with the rock, with the sock, and doing all of that damage. They're staying where they are because it's that housing first model that hopefully eventually gets them all the way clean.
Yes. And John, so would you then vote against this or not sign it because it doesn't have that restriction of letting people not come here? Because that's not going to happen. This may be only a half measure for you, but it seems to be a better half measure than no measure.
Well, if it's good and it works, you will attract people. Because whenever you have
something for free,
people take advantage of it. Washington, D.C. in 2017, as crazy and liberal as that place is, they said, we are not spending our money on people from Virginia and Maryland. We're a little city. We got this amount of money. You've got to show us some proof that you're local. And because if not, you just open up the gates and everybody comes in and you'll continue to say, I can't understand it. We now have 10,000. And last year we had 13,000. And we spent $100 million. How does it keep going up? Because guess what?
I understand the problem.
I'm sorry, Tom. Solution? You're not going to fix the drug problem.
No, but is this, I guess the question is if this is only a half solution for you, is it worth that kind of investment for half the solution?
No, because.
Okay, no,
because
okay, that's what I'm
saying. More people. More people will come.
But will enough come? Yes, but will more? So many people come that it'll basically we won't have any distinction between what's happening in the city streets and parks right now or not. If we can clean up 3/4 of it and then another quarter come in, we're still getting rid of half of that. It still might be worth the bargain. But yeah, it's encouraging, but not panacea.
There's no such thing. The word utopia means impossible place or something like that. Let's see. Tracy Till, look at traffic for us, please. Keel Mortgage. By the way, good article in the Wall Street Journal. If you're thinking about buying a second home, check it out. They talk about how Fannie and Freddie are changing some of the rules. But Keel Mortgage, the ones to talk to when it comes to having anything to do. Actually, do this. Call Keel. Ask them about it. They'll know. Call them and find out more. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. It's the second home buyers just surging markets, Tom. That's the fascinating amount of money people are just blowing as they realize, oh, you know, I'm 60 years old. I'm going to buy a second house. So,
did you notice there's a new Cars for Kids jingle?
I didn't hear it.
That is a shocker.
Is it good?
No.
How could it not be? They're on our station.
I think we can admit it's intentionally. It's intentionally performed poorly, out of tune. It's a very fascinating marketing strategy.
Okay.
But we've gotten multiple texts about it, I will say.
Have we?
Hold on.
Stop the world. I want to get off.
No. That's Anthony Newley.
Anthony Newley. I knew you'd get it, John. Yeah.
What kind of fool am I?
Who am I?
Never fell in love.
Okay.
Tom.
Yes.
Can I say something?
Sure.
It's April Fool's. Do you really think the Cars for Kids spot is supposed to be like, where is the joke? Come on.
Actually, the title of the spot is called April Fools.
Beautiful. Okay, good. Well, I noticed it.
1-877 Cars for Kids. 1-877 That's all they get.
By the way, I made fun of that spot one time, and then bitter Brian Buckaloo came in. He goes, I hope you're happy because now we have to make good, or some ridiculous thing that, you know, kind of right. slapped my wrist. Remember that, Sean? Because you can't make fun of the thing. I played it or talked into it or punched into it while the kid was singing.
Yeah.
I did all the things that people want to do when certain spots are running.
Right. But you're like the host who sort of promotes certain things. So I understand that you're not supposed to make fun of sponsors, you know?
Is it true that Cars for Kids pays more than the others because they know that they can be in a reason that people turn away from the radio in order to call them immediately and donate their car? Is it true?
I have bitter Brian Buckaloo on the line, John. Please stop.
Moving on. All righty. Hey, by the way, if you've got a kid and your kid's a good basketball player, here are the numbers for you. 555,000 kids played high school basketball. How many make it to the pros, Tom?
3.5% of all high school players make it into even college. And then only 1%
from there. Yes.
1% of all the college players. So we're talking about 1%.
160. 160 is what it ends up out of the college. And most kids until they reach about 11 or 12, I'm going to play professional football. I'm going to be a football player. I'm going to be a basketball player. They're like, wah, wah. I mean, a lot of people make a lot of money off of those dreams.
That's right. And so there is an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune about this and saying that, you know, we all want, in fact, every time you have a stellar athlete on, they say, you know, kids, you can dream too. You know, you dream hard enough, all this. Whoa. And that's clearly not the case. This is like the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. And I'm not saying that 1% of 1% of 1% don't really work hard and have those dreams. But most of us are never going to get there. And we realize it as life goes on. So I was wondering, why do you want to write an op-ed about saying, hey, be realistic. Your kid's not going to become a pro, most likely, 99.9% of the time. But what the article really does, the op-ed really does, is point out that there is a kind of an industry built around a youth sports industry that is worth billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. And the question that's raised here is this something that we should be, as parents, should be sort of furthering or not? And she points out that 63% of U.S. families that have kids in sports, they spend between $1 and $500 per month per child. My family, I had five boys. Imagine doing that five times over every month. Almost 20% of those parents paying $1,000 per month. This is big business. And they've invented, this is stuff they didn't have when I was going to school in the Iron Age or whatever. But with my kids, if your kid is pretty good for your school's, you know, your elementary school team, then you can go to these elite squads, and then you have to pay for administration for there. And I've got a nephew who's really good at sports, and he plays football and he plays soccer and all that, and he gets invited to these elite teams, and then what happens? Well, his poor mom and dad have to pay for these. I mean, it's great they get to go to different states and all that, but it gets to be really expensive. And then the question is it worth it? Because if your kid turns pro, obviously he's going to be able to repay you in terms of money, but the kinds of experiences that school sports are good at, which is creating lifelong friendships and teaching you teamwork and determination, you don't need to spend that kind of money to enjoy sports, or do you? That's
you
the op-ed
do
question.
If you are in certain neighborhoods, right? Like when I told the story before, when I sat there with Rye, he's signing up for baseball, and he told me, because he didn't play for 1 year, and then he said, Dad, I'm never going to be able to catch up to everybody. I said, why not? Because everybody has batting coaches. I said, really? I said, the one guy goes, you have a guy goes, yeah, I got a personal, batting coach for Jackson or whatever the kid's name was. And I'm like, really? And then you start to look at how much money it costs. Why can't it just be for fun? But it's never for fun. It just keeps going all the way up. And then you end up, the heat ride roller dropped out because it just didn't, it couldn't compete because I wasn't willing to spend the money on it.
Yeah. I know, and it's definitely unfortunate, because the great thing about sports is, in some ways, it's the great equalizer. If you're good at sports, it doesn't matter if you're poor or rich or whatever. But it turns out that indeed you know, it does matter, because we've kind of, I don't know how you describe it, but because we now have these kinds of elite teams, it's like it fights against the impulse to just play for your school. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's we live in a free country. It's a capitalist society. And if we want to do that, I suppose we can't really stop them. Another issue that this writer raises, and by the way, she's all in favor of youth sports. She's got kids in sports. But she says injuries also, because kids push themselves so hard and end up, you know, spending more and more time on sports, they end up getting more injuries that could be problems down the road, that maybe if we weren't so highly focused on, hey, my kid could be a pro someday. It'd be interesting to run this by Sully. He's got a kid who's got a scholarship, and he mentioned even kids who get scholarships to college, it doesn't cover most of their tuition unless you're at a, you know, Division I school, and even then it's a tough life. So,
but I want to tell any kid out there, you know what? I'm not going to tell you to do it. I'm not going to tell you how to make it. I'm going to let Rudy tell you.
Hey, what you doing here? Don't you have practice?
Not anymore. I quit.
Oh. Well, since when are you the quitting kind?
I don't know. I just don't see the point anymore.
So you didn't make the dress?
Come on, Rudy.
There are greater tragedies in the world.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
Yeah.
To prove to everyone that I worked...
Prove what?
That Goonies never say die.
That I was somebody.
Oh, you are so full of crap. Whoop. You're 5 feet nothing. 100 and nothing. And you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land for 2 years. And you're also going
to
walk out of here with a degree.
No, I'm not kidding.
No, I can wait. That's a good movie.
And he
grew up. We'll get back to that.
He grew up to be Rudy Giuliani.
That's right. Oh, funniest thing I ever saw, holding up at one of the, you know, the games, the Saturday game, college game, that signs in the background, Tom, at the game day thing. It was at Notre Dame, and it said Rudy was offsides. All right. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us. All right. Big changes to Wheel of Fortune, but I don't have to tell you that, Tom, because I know you're watching it on that cable outfit that you're just promoting. They have decided they're gonna set up this little part of it. It's going to be like a crossword puzzle, but there are a couple of rules that you need to obey.
I'd like to solve, Pat.
I'd say everything, don't add anything. Go ahead.
So, okay, say everything, but don't add anything. Meaning just get you, say one, say the word, 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 word.
Word,
but people have
Sole,
a tendency to...
flounder, cod, and catfish.
Tom, did the man add anything? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, that's not right. And Danielle, it's your turn.
See, Pat is not allowed to tell you what you did wrong.
I'm going to solve.
All right, say everything. Don't add anything.
Sole, cod, catfish, flounder.
Yeah, that's it.
I thought that's what you said.
And I know it's always confusing. Oh. And David did that thing that's so easy to do. You added the and.
This has caused a firestorm, John, and the people who watch.
Oh yeah, Tom.
Game shows.
I could hardly sleep last night. I could hear the people just screaming last night. Just torture.
Don't
you
add
could smell
anything.
The pitch and the tar. Don't add anything.
Don't add anything. So people are up in arms because that seems like such a minor rule violation. It's a four-word crossword, and he says, and each time, and you never pay attention to it, but if you're a player, you probably would. He just says, just say the words, don't add anything. Well, this guy just was so happy he figured out the puzzle. He just said, and whatever the fourth word was, catfish or something. Mm-hmm. And he got caught. And then the question is that fair or not? Most people, apparently on the internet at least, are outraged by it. And this was proposed.
Outraged.
Well, you know, it's internet outrage. It's not this is ridiculous. Okay. But we did have a listener send us this link, and he made a proposal or suggestion about how we would react to this. And I don't know if he's right or wrong about you, but I know he's wrong about me. And that is, here's his theory, John. His theory is liberals are going to be like, oh, come on, give it to them. It was like, that's a ridiculous rule. And conservatives who are sticklers, he thinks, for the rules would say, nope, you didn't play by the rules. You're out of there. However, yeah. I am as liberal as they come, at least especially compared to you. And yet I, because I'm a oldest and a rule follower, I say, yes, Pat even tells you these are the rules of the game. It's like you don't win Jeopardy if you don't put it in the form of a question. So I would say, oh, I'm so sympathetic. I'm so sorry, but you didn't get that right.